and welcome to Ride the Omnibus. I'm your host, Ariel Baska, and today I'm speaking with filmmaker Jason Loftus about the new VR experience Eternal Spring, a virtual reality documentary that brings you inside the world of a real-life survivor of religious persecution in China.
I'm absolutely blown away by the depth of what you're doing across a lot of different fields. I'm also a very multidisciplinary, intergalactic kind of person. So I'm really attracted by this idea of telling different kinds of stories in very specific media that suit that story. And so I love what you're doing with this project, Eternal Spring VR. And congratulations on the nomination for Best Immersive Nonfiction Experience at the Canadian Screen Awards.
Thank you very much.
I'm really blown away by everything this represents, and I know I've only experienced a small fraction of it, given that you also have the haptic suits to enhance the experience. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what prompted you to choose to make this really incredible story about Falun Gong persecution.
Yeah, thank you. So it's interesting. It's a bit of an apologies a little bit with my voice today, but no, I really appreciate that intro. And it actually has come full circle because the whole thing started with a video game we were making. We were doing this narrative kung fu video game called Shuyan Saga a few years ago. And we were looking for an artist to do these hand-drawn panels because we had this kind of graphic novel aesthetic to it. So we learned about this artist. His name is Dashong, and he was originally from China, and he was living in New York, and he had drawn for Justice League and Star Wars comics, and so we thought he'd be a great fit. So we brought him up, and we learned about his harrowing story. I think it's a little, I'm in San Francisco for the Game Developers Conference, and I think the air in the hotel is a little bit dry, so it's really, really been getting to me. But no, we brought him up to our studio in Toronto, and we were collaborating with him, and we learned about how he had to flee his home in China, and how that was connected with this dramatic heist of the state TV airwaves that a group of persecuted Falun Gong adherents had undertaken in China. And so that led to the film Eternal Spring. And then from there, though, because we work across different mediums and we work in interactive, we really feel that each medium sort of lends itself to different experiences and it has its own strengths and merits. So in this case, with the VR, we really feel, okay, it's not so strong for the long form storytelling, in my opinion. Like as a director, if I want to tell a long form story, I want to be able to control the shot. If I want to have a character, I want to communicate emotion, I'll use a close up shot. That doesn't work in VR. That's just someone standing very awkwardly right in your face. So I think the conventions are different. You have to just, but it's very, very useful for immersion and empathy and putting yourself into someone else's shoes. And so we had this idea while we were shooting the film to also take the sort of live action 360 camera that we had and capture some VR footage, and then to use the animation that we were making for the film and to similarly build an experience out that would be very personal. And so part of this is that the character Mr. White, that's his alias that he goes by in the film for his own sort of safety during this whole TV hijacking, his real name now, he's outside of China. He's named Jun Xiezhe, and he's living in Seoul. And he had a very heart-touching personal story. But in the film, we don't get into all of that. And so I felt VR would be very good to sort of explore in depth his personal experience from his point of view. And then the haptic feedback suit is really, it's optional. Like you can still experience it without it. But it's just because we identified that the core of this experience is the immersion, it's the empathy. And so going further with that emotion or with that sensation, it's about giving you that additional depth. So you then can feel when the police accost you on the street, you can sense your heart pounding when you're being interrogated. So it's just about heightening that strength, that sort of key element of what that experience is about. And the experience is about empathy and about immersion.
And it's really astonishing to me how much incorporating all of the senses in different kinds of ways really does activate other pathways to empathy. A lot of people have gone on about cinema as the empathy machine, but really feels like the more immersive an experience can become, the more neural pathways you can connect to that are going to really make people feel feelings in a very specific way. And I think specifically when you're dealing with a group that's faced so much large-scale persecution, I think it's really a powerful way to tell this story. So what was your way into figuring out how you were going to talk about Falun Gong in the storytelling of the immersion experience?
Right. So that's a great question. I think there's different ways in the two different experiences. So from the film, we give it very much like the overview and the context. We use some archival news clippings. We do have interviews with people, so you understand from different perspectives what Falun Gong, what their spiritual practice meant to them. From the news context, the archival, we understand, okay, this practice is something that was brought to the public in 1992. It has sort of ancient traditions, but it was publicly introduced in 1992. And then from that point on, it spread very quickly in popularity in China. And we give some context for that in the film. But in the VR experience, it felt much more just to keep it small and personal. So this is very much what it all meant to him. So we have that experience where Mr. White first encounters the group in a park in his city. And this is very, I think, commonplace at that time. The Falun Gong practice was being just sort of practiced in parks all over the city early in the morning. And that's how a lot of people came across it. They just found these people doing these slow moving exercises and were introduced to the sort of spiritual dimensions from that as well. So in this experience, you can actually, you take on the role of Mr. White, you encounter the group, and you can use your controllers to kind of mirror, you know, there's a lady there, an older lady who's teaching you the practice, and, you know, she'll give you feedback if you get your hands up right or not. So you kind of immerse yourself in what it's like to have been in that scenario where Falun Gong was freely practiced and what it meant to these people before the persecution ensues.
It's really powerful because feeling, I will also admit, I have practiced Qigong in small ways in my little suburb of Washington, D.C., where just different practitioners sometimes go to community centers and share their knowledge. And there is power in the movement. There's a real feeling of connection there with the movement. And it's so incredible that you can use this technology to tap into that as well. And so I think it's really a wonderful way to move through something that is both a spiritual practice as well as a movement technique, as well as a real touchstone for so many people the world over. And I also feel like it's so incredible that you had so many wonderful people working on this project. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you brought the team together?
So it's very interesting. I like very much to collaborate with people who have a lived experience, especially when you're telling real life stories. I think it really enhances something. So it was wonderful to have, you know, of course, in the film, it's very much Dashong's point of view, the artist, and we tell the story through his artistic lens. But we also have him collaborating to help Mr. White tell his story. So we bring together, through art that he creates, that we animate, this immersive experience and this memory of Mr. White. And I think because Mr. White and Dashong had a shared experience, they were both from the same town, they endured similar persecution or at least overlapping events. It was very good to have someone as an artist, and to have someone as an artist who came from that world to be able to help Mr. White tell his story. And to me, that just added a layer of authenticity. But I think also from the production standpoint, there's also, you know, there's the storytelling, there's the narrative. Interactive adds another layer. There's the art, like you also have in film, but then there's the interactivity. You need to build it to make sure that it's engaging, and you need to make sure that it works, and there's the coding and all of that. So there's so many disciplines that stack up in interactive media, which makes unique challenges, but also I think makes it very rewarding when you're able to put all of those pieces together to make something unique.
Yeah. Has there been any consideration to making this an accessible experience as well? I'm very curious about different ways to make either the technology accessible or extending certain aspects of the experience in creative ways.
Yeah, so we've gone with them, I think, from a VR perspective, tried to make something as straightforward as possible. And part of that is because our main focus is on the storytelling and the immersion and empathy, but it is a seated experience. And so I think that perhaps opens up doors a little bit in terms of who it's amenable for. There are, of course, restrictions because, I mean, there isn't anything particularly graphic or gory, but obviously it is an intense experience because we are dealing with someone's trauma. So we do caution people about that, you know, if with heart conditions or people who might be emotionally triggered by very disturbing sort of stories and this kind of thing. There might be challenges with that, but we've tried to reach people sort of wherever they are through different mediums. So also last week, we made available worldwide an interactive digital comic. It is currently just on the iOS stores, but it's available for iPhone and iPad. And so you can see some of the art that existed in Eternal Spring now sort of repurposed and told in a new way with a new story and then music to it and sounds and voiceover as well. So that it's an interactive graphic novel experience that you can find on the iOS App Store. And then the film, of course, is now in its wide release. So we have it broadcasting, it's streaming with Vice even. I think currently you can see it on YouTube, on Vice's channel there as well. And it's available. If you go to the Eternal Spring Film website, eternalspringfilm.com, you can see where it is broadcasting around the world. So we're trying to reach people as many different ways and as many different mediums as possible just to share this story in a different, you know, context.
Yeah. Have you also considered including audio description? Because I feel like with the haptic suits, this would be perfectly suited for a blind and low vision audience. I identify as low vision because I'm blind in one eye, but there are a lot of people within the blind community who I think would really resonate to this story if audio description was on offer.
Oh, I really appreciate that suggestion. That is something that didn't come to our minds with the VR headsets as of yet, because I guess it's just something that didn't occur to us. And I really appreciate that. We were very fortunate on the film side to collaborate with the Human Rights Watch Film Festival, who was doing that for a lot of films. They were helping with the audio descriptions and such, because for a lot of independent filmmakers, it's a challenge sometimes, right? Because there's the production cost on that. So they were collaborated with us and we were able to present that. And we do have a version with the film that has those, which I think is wonderful. And it's very unfortunate that Human Rights Watch, for those who are aware, is unfortunately having its last run of festivals. Another film that I'm part of as an executive producer is the opening film for both the last London and the last Toronto film festivals. It's called Medea. And it's very unfortunate because they've done so much great work to make films accessible and also to shine a light on many important stories. So I appreciate that on the VR side. That's a very interesting idea that I had not thought of before, but we'll definitely take that back. Thank you.
Really, truly, with Human Rights Watch, if I can just follow up on that real quick, it's not just one festival, it's 30 festivals shutting down. But it's so wonderful that they were able to help you to make this a more accessible project. I think that's wonderful.
They were a great partner in Eternal Spring. We premiered in both our UK premiere and US premiere was with Human Rights Watch Film Festivals, and their whole team was just wonderful to work with. And it's going to be sorely missed, I think, by many people in the documentary community and in the impact documentary space, but also by, you know, audiences, because, you know, in terms of human rights impact, you know, what you can convey in a 90-minute feature film is so much. You can really bring people close to an issue, give them a complete understanding, or at least a very strong understanding in a short period of time because of the work that goes into a film and the power that film has. So I think it's a real shame, but, you know, we will, there are fortunately some other really excellent human rights festivals as well out there, and we'll just have to devote our attentions even more to those. But in the meantime, you know, we're looking forward. Actually, I'm returning from San Francisco on overnight on Wednesday because I will be on a panel Thursday with Human Rights Watch at their last festival in Toronto.
Oh, wow. That's really incredible that you're going to be there for their last festival. And I really hope moving forward with this project that you can find some really wonderful homes for what this represents, because it is such a powerful story. And I wonder also for the rollout of the VR experience, how exactly do you market? This is a curiosity on my part. Pardon my ignorance, because I'm actually a fairly new convert to the VR landscape. But I'm very interested in how you bridge the technology empathy divide in marketing specifically. Like, how do you make sure that people understand what it is they're signing up for?
You declare that in your app store descriptions and such, you know.
I know. But I mean, to get people to the awareness level to.
It is definitely a challenge in the VR space. I mean, a lot of these things are, obviously, you know, Meta has shot ahead and has built a storefront where there is the opportunity, at least for some commercial success for a number of products. But when you're looking more at the experiences and looking more, especially in a human rights context, these become more niche within that larger, you know, it's not the big, you know, sort of AAA titles that are bringing in a lot of the coin, right? And so it's difficult and you have to tap into audiences. But I think it's something that is definitely emerging and growing, and there's an awareness that's growing as well. But a lot of times these experiences are difficult to make extremely commercially successful. You look for some opportunities, but you also want to make it accessible for people too. And so that we're doing that with the Steam release, which is upcoming. It is currently in the meta through the link, the experience. We linked it. It's a seeded experience and it's sort of designed to optimize to give you the most that we can. We have it set as a seeded experience with a link. And so that's where you can access it right now. It will be available on Steam. And once it's in Steam, it will be made available free for a period of time there as well. And our goal is just to make it so that as many people can experience it as possible. We do have other VR experiences that are more, you know, still things that I think we're very proud about, but there's more of a large scale sort of business plan behind it to try and make that work commercially. There's another experience called Versus VR that we're working on right now, which is sort of immersing you in the spoken word traditions of different cultures and different locations. We work together with cultural consultants, including West African griots and people from China, with working with Chinese poetry and you know, their sort of classical music traditions and stuff. It's very interesting and a diverse sort of array of different cultural experiences that you can encounter. And we have plans for that one that will be more heavily marketed for Eternal Spring. We have the benefit of also everything we do with the VR experience is also drawing attention to the film. So people who access the VR experience, even if we if it's made available for free on some platforms and it's not a huge monetization opportunity, it is also a promotion of the film, which is available for purchase.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant idea for creating a more enduring and more lasting sort of tribute to the concepts of the film and creating a monument that's a little different and in a different alternative reality. And it's so beautiful the way it's been constructed. And I want to just commend you so much on creating something so powerful.
Thank you so much, Ariel. I really appreciate that.
I really appreciated this. And I want to thank you so much for a great interview. And I wish you all the success in the world on your festival run. I hope it goes great.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye.
Thank you for listening. And thank you for taking a moment right now to reflect with me on the history of the land you are listening on now. Whether you are stuck in traffic or sitting in your office chair, take the time to look up whose traditional lands you are on now and what treaties govern those territories. I record this podcast on the site of land stolen from the Manahoac people. I am grateful to work on this land, and I acknowledge that we need to protect and honor the history of the indigenous people from other tribal nations that have made innumerable contributions around the world. I share this in the hope that my listeners may join me in honoring our past, present, and future. Without this land, this earth, and each other, we are nothing. Before I go, please take 30 seconds now to leave us a 5-star review by clicking on Support the Show in the show notes. We don't want your money, we want your words. A simple RTO rocks my socks expands our reach and helps us keep bringing you great content. And connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, where we are at Omnibus Ride. You can also visit our website, omnibusride.com, where you can go to dive deeper into our content and learn more about the show. A special thank you to our amazing editor, William Dass. We truly couldn't do what we do without him or Danielle. Be well, be safe, and keep in touch.